Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back. Episode 166 of CJ Evolution, that is Criminal Justice Evolution. Pat Fitzgibbons here, host and creator of the show. Whatever you were doing, wherever you were at, thank you for tuning in. Special thanks to all those first responders out there protecting us day in and day out in a very difficult environment. I know sometimes you don't think you have the support. You have tons of support out there. We applaud you. We salute you doing a very difficult job in a very difficult environment. Thank you so much. Keep up the fantastic work. Special thanks to all those people out there who are listening, tuning in, who are not part of the criminal justice family. Thank you. Maybe you're just interested to see what we're doing over here in the criminal justice field. Thank you for tuning in. You know, in law enforcement, I know everybody knows this, but we need to remain vigilant. We need to remain trained. We need to be prepared for anything. My next guest exemplifies this. He is one of the most sought-after trainers in the United States. He is Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. If you don't know who he is one of the most revered figures in military and law enforcement circles. He's a former West Point psychology professor who spent much of his career studying killology. This is his term for the psychology of taking a life. His first book, On Killing, is part of the curriculum at the FBI Academy and on the Marine Corps' Commandant's Professional Reading List. This was truly an amazing episode with a true American hero. So I give you the one, the only, Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman on the show. If you don't know who he is, you need to find out. He does so much for our nation's military as well as law enforcement. Sir, thank you for being here. I know you're very, very busy.
Thank you, Patrick. Honored to be on board. You're doing great things,
I think. Well, I appreciate it. And I didn't give you due justice when I gave you that brief bio. Sir, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you've done in your career?
Well, you know, I'm a prior service buck sergeant, came in the Army in 1974, paratrooper, 82nd Airborne Division.
Who?
Went to OCS and became an officer, Army Ranger, a West Point psychology professor, infantry company commander, and retired as professor of military science at Arkansas State University 20 years ago. I've been on the road for the last 20 years, almost 300 days a year. Training military and law enforcement nationwide. My first book was On Killing. On Killing is a Marine Corps Commandant's required reading, Army and Air Force recommended reading. For this audience, my most important book is On Combat. Mm-hmm. Issued in the DEA Academy, issued in the Marshals Academy, Marine Corps Commandant's required reading. They are the definitive reference. You know, what I found out was for those who fully prepared themselves, killing is just not that big a deal. Is very academically interesting, but and it's useful to understand how we train cops and soldiers to kill, mm-hmm. how the video game is doing the same thing to our kids. But when you really get the information that the guy in the gunfight needs to know ahead of time, it's in On Combat. Mm-hmm. My most recent book is Our Assassination Generation. We'll talk about crime rate data. The key thing I want to talk to you about is crime rates and the dynamics. I co-authored a book with Glenn Beck on gun control, mm-hmm. and it is the best thing we got out there. Control is the name of the book. If you're interested at all in the subject of gun control, Glenn Beck's best-selling book, Control. I think I wrote more of the book than he did. He gets his name on the front. That's how it works. We have two kids' books. We have the Sheepdog Kids book, which is, all this is on Amazon.
Yeah,
and we're blowing people away with the Sheepdog Kids book. But when it came out, it was mostly military and law enforcement focused. A lot of people said, Dave, what about a civilian sheepdogs? And so we wrote a second book. It's Why Mommy Carries a Gun. Mm-hmm. If anybody in the family, mom or dad, is going to carry a gun, here's what we want the kids to know.
Yeah.
Find a gun, stop, don't touch, get an adult. The universal gun safety laws, our heritage, our history. We got the most amazing artwork in there. We found the best dog gun artist for this book. You know, there's Alvin York. Alvin York is a Yorkie, you know, and we got sheepdog marksmanship models. So it's been a crazy ride. A lot of good things happening. And in all my years of doing this, Pat, this is the craziest of all times. It is the worst of times. It's the best of times. It's bad, and it's going to get a hell of a lot worse.
Well, first of all, thank you for your service, sir, your military service. I was in the 82nd. I was in Charlie Company, 2nd of the 505th, down at Fort Bragg. But thank you for your military service and getting back to what you just said about getting bad and it's going to get worse. I agree with you. As you know, sir, a deputy in Colorado was shot and killed a few days ago, tragically. They were called to a disturbance call. They were ambushed by, it looks like, a veteran. Iraq veteran, although I don't know if he spent that much time over there, but he had a beef against the sheriff and the department, and these poor officers, these poor deputies walked into an ambush. And how do you train? I want to get into the bulletproof mind that you talk about, but how do you train for that, sir? I mean, they're walking into an ambush. They don't know what they're walking. It's one, if you have information, you know, that you're going into, you know, somebody with a gun or something like that, I get that, but they just walked into it, into an ambush.
Here's the baseline on this. And this is so terribly important. Please, whenever I do any CJ presentation, shout it from the mountaintops. Grab the media and shake them until they understand it. The number of murdered cops, the number of murdered citizens completely underrepresents the problem. Because medical technology is saving ever more lives every year. UMass Harvard study tells us if we had 1970s medical technology, the murder rate would be four times what it is. And that data is 20 years old. When they look at the murder rate between now and a decade ago, it's a lie. Because across that decade, medical technology is saving ever more lives. The dynamic of the baseline of criminal justice is the murder rate. How bad is violence? How bad is crime? And they use the murder rate as the gold standard when the truth is the sneaky dang docs are saving ever more lives every year. We got to shout from the mountainside. You know what? A record number of people murdered in Baltimore. Put it in perspective. If we had 1970s medical technology, that number would be at least four times.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And the same thing's true of cops murdered in the line of duty. If it weren't for body armor, the number of murdered cops be double what it is. Body armor, some number of dead cops in half or not the top. If we had 1970s medical technology, that number would be four times what it is. So two times four is eight. Take away body armor, take away medical technology. Just take away two of many, many factors. And the number of murdered cops would be eight times what it is. Every year, better training, better tactics, better equipment. Better medical technology, better communication technology. We've got to understand every year we're holding down the number of dead. We're not holding down the number of dead cops. So when you talk about that cop being murdered, what I want you to understand is this. The first step is understanding the magnitude of the threat, just how bad it is. Our number one enemy is complacency. Our number one enemy is denial. We've got to fully understand just how bad it is and to be able to wrap our minds around that and prepare her in these tragic, violent times. So, you know, what we had is we've got officers murdered in the line of duty across the years. I'll be presenting this just over the holidays. I put together this slide. We'll make a nice slide out of it. I'll present it to every one of my classes. But between in 2011, 88 cops were murdered in the line of duty. Now, the previous two decades, that's a record number of cops murdered, 2011. But the following year, we brought that down. Body armor, tactics, training, technology, the 100 initiative. In 2013, it went down to 40 officers murdered, and then things have come unglued. And folks, between 2013 and 2015, we had 21 more cops murdered than the year before. And this is horrendous. This is bizarre. And then at 2015, kind of stayed stable. And then 2016, the worst year-over-year increase in cops murdered in the history of our nation. We had 22 cops more in 2016 and 2015 murdered. The FBI flat says it's the Ferguson effect. FBI says politicians pandering to criminals. We got the media taking the criminal side. We got a media out there that doesn't identify with the cop. They identify with the criminal.
Yeah.
They've seen, Sopranos and Breaking Bad and Sons of Anarchy and Grand Theft Auto. They're a generation that grew up convinced that the criminals are the good guys.
Yeah.
There'd be one cop movie in 30 years, then a bad cop in there somewhere. We all cheer when the bad cop dies.
Yeah.
So the media has this blood on their hands, this explosion of violence. And in 2016, record worst year-over-year increase in cops murdered, the numbers should be coming down. In 2017, we were back exactly where we were in 2015, which is bad. But that enormous spike in officers murdered. Now, here's the point. In 2016, we had 5 murdered in Dallas. We had 4 murdered in Baton Rouge. We had onesies and twosies everywhere. But you don't hear about the one when there's just one cop murdered.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were able to stop it.
Yeah.
The murderer in Dallas was an African-American veteran. He was a dirtbag in the military. He's a dirtbag as a citizen. Our veterans are far less likely to commit a violent crime than a non-veteran the same age.
Mm-hmm.
Veterans are less than a tenth as likely to commit a violent crime as a non-veteran of the same age. But when they do, they can be scared of. Here's a guy that had the drop on some cops, and he murdered one and wounded several more.
Mm-hmm.
Medical technology saved those others. Body armor saved those others. Tactics and training saved those others. So the fundamental answer to your question is, keep doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Be smart. Be ready. Wait for backup. Have somebody on overwatch. Have your rifles, if there's the least out in your, on overwatch.
Mm-hmm.
Do the things you've been trained to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a friend of mine led an infantry company into Grenada on the 82nd Airborne and the Rangers Grenadier. And he turned to his first sergeant, kind of, they're loaded up, they're ready to parachute in. And just joking, he asked the first sergeant, hey, any last, because he'd been a Vietnam veteran, that last of that Vietnam veteran generation was going away. He said, any last minute advice? And the first sergeant said, yeah. It was kind of rhetorical. And he said, the first sergeant said, do exactly what we trained to do.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the time to make things up.
Mm-hmm.
This is the game where we use the plays that we practice. He said, take your time. The bad guy will still be there in 10 minutes. Call in artillery. Call in airstrikes. Call in overwatch. Maneuver to superior positions. Do the things we've been trained to do and take your time. Wait for backup. Wait for someone to come back. Check the backboard. Have rifles on overwatch. If there's the least doubt in your mind, you don't have to have the rifle up and aimed.
Sure.
But somebody behind a vehicle with the rifle slung and ready,
yeah,
in a fraction of a second, be up and ready.
Yeah.
Cops.
Well, and you're exactly right, sir. I mean, complacency kills. And I think what happens is with some of these is, and this is just my opinion, is there, while these type of instances are increasing, they're still relatively rare. And so we don't go in that. It's like what you were talking about, complacency. We go in there thinking, it's going to be just a domestic violence or we're going to clean it up. And then all hell breaks loose. And then, like you said,
understanding the magnitude of the threat comes in.
Exactly.
That's how bad it is.
Mm-hmm.
Record numbers of cops year-over-year increase in cops murdered beyond anything we've ever seen before.
Mm-hmm.
The murder rate. What I want to show you is this. That not just the murder rate, but the number of people murdered has come down almost every year because of medical technology.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got, starting in 2006, down, little blip up in 2012, down. And then in 2015 and 2016, we have the greatest explosion of Americans murdered in the history of our nation. Hmm. But between 2014 and 2015, we had 1,700 more Americans murdered the year before, and the numbers should be coming down.
Mm-hmm.
In 2016, last year, we had 1,300 more Americans. Now, if the number had stayed the same, it would be bad.
Mm-hmm.
This is compound interest. This is 2 years straight for the most horrendous increase in people murdered. And again, the FBI says this is the Ferguson effect. The FBI says we've created a sense of anger in our criminals. I call it a sense of righteous indignation.
Mm-hmm.
The media has this blood on their hands. These, between the three shifts, on any given day, 500,000 cops are out on the street. What are the odds one of them will do something stupid? And everything every cop does is video.
Yep.
Now, take the one stupid. or at least out of context in the video looks bad. And you play it night after night after night after night. And what have you done? You've created this sense of righteous indignation in our criminals.
Yeah.
The cops are murdering and getting away with it. I hear that all the time. Cops are getting away with murder out there.
Yeah,
I know it's not true, yeah. But the media feeds this perspective. The media has their blood on their hands. We need to be angry at the mainstream media, the corporate media. Thank God we got Fox News out there and a couple of other channels that can give us the truth. But we've seen that the media in these elections and after the election has lost all pretense of being nonpartisan.
Mm-hmm.
Media no longer even tries to pretend that they're nonpartisan. They never have been. They've always been completely anti-cop, left-wing, slanted in the media. But in the last, since the election, they've come completely unglued. And the attack on cops and the attack on our nation and the attack on our way of life is absolutely overwhelming. But our cops, the first step in resiliency is motivation.
Yeah.
Believe in who you are. Believe in what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what the good news? All this stuff I told you, you know the good news? You have job security.
Mm-hmm.
The world desperately needs what you have to give.
Yeah.
These are the worst of times or the best of times. Courage and honor shine bright for the darkness of the age.
Well, and the one thing that really struck me, I was watching a presentation that you gave, sir, a few days ago, and you made a really good point when a lot of these people, media, call these murderers shooters. They're not shooters.
They're murderers.
They're murderers.
And this is so important. If we take the most horrible murders in history, the Sandy Hook shooter, the Virginia Tech shooter, the Mandalay Las Vegas shooter, if we take the most horrible mass murders and call them shooters, then when you're a shooter, you're condemned by your own words.
Mm-hmm.
They're murderers. Shooting is a lawful good thing.
Yeah.
Shooting is a constitutional right. To take that word shooting, every time you hear somebody call a mass murderer a shooter, and you hear the phrase active shooter response, I want you to laugh at them and say we'd be real busy during deer season.
Mm-hmm.
It is not active shooter. It's active intruder, active assailant.
Mm-hmm.
And what if he's not shooting? What if he has bombs? What if he has knives? We limit ourselves in this mindset he's going to be shooting. We've got cases where he wasn't shooting. The teacher said he's not shooting. He's not an active shooter. I wasn't sure if the training applied. So words have power. We work in a business with the great precision of language, the alleged perpetrator,
mm-hmm.
Class A and Class B misdemeanors and felonies. Use language precisely.
Exactly.
Do not call a criminal a shooter.
Mm-hmm.
A shooter. They are murderers. They are criminal assaulters. And be very careful with the language we use. And don't use that word shooter lightly. Shooting is a noble and worthy, constitutionally protected act.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sport. It's an activity. And to take the word shooting and use it for these criminals should anger us right down to our soul.
Well, it's like you said, sir. I mean, the media takes that, and it's almost like it's a conditioning of the public.
Yes.
Because they use that so much that that's all people equate it with. It's just a shooter.
Yeah, and when the cop shoots, there must be something wrong. He's a shooter. The shooter's a bad guy.
Yeah.
It's anti-cop propaganda every time you call a criminal a shooter.
You talk about how you've trained so many law enforcement, sir, and military personnel about having a bulletproof mind. Can you explain a little bit about that and to the listeners?
I was a keynote speaker at the first Department of Defense-wide resiliency conference. I was the opening speaker of the second DOD-wide resiliency conference. Resiliency is a term for people who do not get PTSD. And the first step in resiliency is motivation. To know that your sacrifice is for a noble and worthy purpose. But no cop gets in this job for the money. Now, you deserve to be paid, well. That hyperviolent Latin America model is coming at us like a freight train.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between us and Latin America is we got a lot of money. When things go bad, we throw money at it. And you're going to see cops getting paid more. The person who decides whether or not to shoot your kid should be the best trained, best qualified, best paid person on the planet. And you're going to see that coming.
Mm-hmm.
Look, nobody does this job for the money. You do it because you believe in making the world a better place. Because you're a sheepdog.
Mm-hmm.
Because you want to take your life and protect others and make the world a better place. You know, I asked almost every cop, I get a chance. I'm in vehicles every night. You know, a cop picks me up at the airport and drive to the hotel. And what made you decide to be a cop? And you know what one cop said recently? He said, you know, I grew up in a family where we were on the other side of law enforcement. We were the ones they were responding to in my family, and it was bad. And I remember as a kid how bad it was. He said, I remember every time a cop showed up, things got better. And I decided that's what I was going to do. But what an insight from a kid.
Yeah.
Things are bad. The cop shows up, everything gets better. And that's what we are. I'm a reserve cop. We got to believe in who we are. Got to believe in what we do. First step in resilience is motivation. The sheep are always trying to pull you down. But the second step is motivation turned into action.
Mm-hmm.
Wear your body armor. Practice on your own. I want to give your listeners two case studies. The first case study is Officer Greg Stevens outside of Dallas, Texas, at the Draw the Prophet Muhammad Art Festival. Could they be more provocative? Draw mm-hmm. the Prophet Muhammad Art Festival. And two art critics from Arizona showed up. They bailed out of the vehicle. Put them in the Pulse nightclub times two. They had body armor. They had rifles. They had the element of surprise. They rolled out of the vehicle, and a 59-year-old traffic cop with a Glock killed them both. Game over. The gunfight began about 40 feet away. The two doors swing open. The car stops where it should. Spider sense is already thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Doors open. He's already in position one. You know, when we train, we start with the hand off the gun. That's Hollywood. That's competition.
Mm-hmm.
You start with the hand on the gun. If there's the least doubt in your mind, you go to position one.
Exactly.
You do that right now. You cut your draw time in half. Those two doors swing open. He's already in position one. He sees he's on the passenger side, 40 feet away. That right leg comes out, and the AK-47 comes out. The guy takes aim at him. He says, "I for the life of me, I can't tell you who shot first. But I don't know who shot best."
Yeah.
So in position one, and drew a snapshot from 40 feet away, hit him in the hip and dropped him. Assumed for the beginning, he had body armor. And which a volley of a total of 30 rounds at Greg Stevens, never hit once.
Mm-hmm.
So he puts a four now on that guy again. He's coming around the trunk of the vehicle. The bad guy on the driver's side rolls out and shoots an unarmed security guard. The unarmed security guards have no purpose whatsoever. Don't call unarmed people
security. Why are you calling them security?
All right, there's legal liability with that word security. Call him what you want.
Yeah.
But never call an unarmed man security. That's liability. So he shoots an unarmed security guard and starts shooting at Greg Stevens, spinning around. Greg's coming around the trunk of the vehicle. Multiple headshots, torso shot, pelvic shot, game over. The first bad guy's still twitching, going for his throat. Greg Stevens thought he might have a detonation device for a bomb. More headshots. Got two rounds left in his Glock. The guy's still twitching. Two more headshots. Mag change. Check 360. Ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
He received the Presidential Medal of Valor. I show a photograph of President Obama given. Now, at that point in time, he's 60 years old. His birthday was just a few days after that. He's got a little bit of a belly, a little bit shorter than me. But he is what our fathers and grandfathers honored.
Mm-hmm.
The World War II veterans honored one thing, marksmanship above all else. Now, he took on two rifle-armed individuals in one, the Pulse nightclub. There was an off-duty police officer there. It was one bad guy. And the cop, the off-duty cop, saw the bad guy step out with the rifle and murder two people. And he returned fire from less than 30 feet away, most of a magazine, never hit once. Now, which one do you want to be?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to be the one with the president hanging a medal around your neck? Are you going to be the one looking at 49 dead bodies in the Pulse nightclub?
Mm-hmm.
Say they'd all be alive today if I could have made the hit. And the point of all that is motivation turned into action. Train. Be ashamed to have the range open, ammo available, not be there. Be ashamed
mm-hmm.
have the range open, ammo available, not be there. Do training on your own time. Officer Greg Stevens, the man who killed those two would-be terrorists, he on his own money and his own time, as a Texas cop, he found the time and found the money to train. It's funny. Any cop can find the money to go fishing or golfing. Any cop can find the time to go fishing or golfing. Can we find the time to hit the range? Can we find the time to nurture those skills? The first step in resilience is motivation. Mm-hmm. The Bible says faith without works is dead. Motivation without action is not motivation. Turn that motivation into action. Seek training. carry the equipment, wear your body armor, have a backup gun, train with your equipment, hit the range at least once a month. These are perishable skills. Develop your skills and decide now, am I going to be the full sniper? Look at our 49 dead bodies, knowing they'd all be alive if I could have made one hit from most of a magazine from 30. You know, we're not saying it's easy. The guy in the Pulse nightclub was under gunfire. Gray Stevens under fire from two people, and he accomplished the mission. It's about training. A roly-poly little guy on the pistol team. Every department had a pistol team. And here's what the World War II vets knew. We'll grow old, and we'll probably grow fat, and it's okay as long as you're still one hell of a shot.
I would go one step further, and there's so many ranges out there now. I mean, I go above and beyond most cops, you know, sir. I mean, they're only going to shoot when they have to shoot, when they're ordered to shoot. All right, we have arranged next week. You guys are going to go shoot, but go above and beyond that. I mean, you know, I spend money to go to the range by myself and you know, constantly improve, because you're exactly right. Those are perishable skills, meaning, for those of you who don't know what that means they disappear if you're not keeping up to date with them.
Yeah.
So it's so.
The next step in motivation, or the next step in resiliency, and that's what, you know, this is an all-day class when I work my way through these, but the next step is a positive self-fulfilling prophecy. To believe that this life and death event will make you stronger. A new greatest generation is rising up. You know, we talk about our veterans. Google, just what ratio of the veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan have PTSD? And it used to be you had to dig for this. Now it comes right up. 5%. Now, 16% of the veterans who deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan have PTSD. 11% of the ones who didn't deploy have PTSD. About 5% of the troops who deploy get PTSD. And we're darn good at treating them. The British study of their troops, 5%. The two best studies of our troops, 5%. The Veterans Administration of U.S., 5%. The Dutch study of their troops in Afghanistan, about 5%. The other 95% are stronger from the experience. You understand? Those 5% who do contract PTSD, we're good at treating it. You saw the movie Lone Survivor, Marcus Luttrell. I worked with Marcus Luttrell before and after the incident. Marcus has a podcast called Team Never Quit. And I was on his podcast a little over a year ago and had his permission to talk about it. I worked with Marcus' unit before and after the incident. Post-traumatic stress is like being overweight. Post-traumatic stress disorder is like being obese. You understand that word disorder? Brings it up to a new level. Post-traumatic stress is overweight. Post-traumatic stress disorder is obese. Marcus Luttrell's doc told me, the lone survivor, that he came back from that incident and was 500 pounds PTSD. A year later, he was 50 pounds PTSD. He wanted to deploy again with his unit, and he did, and it was a good thing. And I told him at the time, I said, look how far you've come in just the last year. Have confidence you can go farther. The day he tells us he is 100% post-traumatic stress free and stronger for the experience.
That's amazing.
Yeah, if a man like that can recover fully and be stronger, anybody can. Well, I say, pity party, no macho man. Don't pop a pity party. Don't think it's going to destroy you. We'll become a self-fulfilling prophecy. But don't be the macho man. If you need help, get it.
Yes.
Have faith that help can help. One of the greatest lies out there is PTSD is for life. Why would any mental health professional say that in the face of ever-advancing medical science, in the face of hundreds of thousands of PTSD cases we treated and recovered fully? Why would any mental health professional say PTSD is for life? What we're dealing with is anti-war propaganda. Veterans are homicidal, suicidal, PTSD-riddled nutcases, when the truth is just the opposite. So I have a positive self-fulfilling prophecy. But if there is a problem, you deal with it. And a faith to help can help.
And I hope, and I don't know if you see, sir, I think we're improving with that in law enforcement. I think we have a long way to go. But like you said, if an officer goes through a period, a tough time, the first thing they need to do, sir, is like you said, they need to reach out. I mean, and seek that help. Because I think too many guys out there, too many officers out there, they hold it inside. And that's what really destroys. You need to get it out there.
what we have nationwide is mandatory. Mm-hmm. That way there's no, hey, it's mandatory. Everybody in the shooting had to go and talk to the shrink. Mm-hmm. I think there's great value in that. Because then there's, everybody does it, no shame in it. And if you need help, you get it. Leadership has got to be sure we don't in any way punish or harm the cop who went to get help. Mm-hmm. We didn't make sure that that's a positive thing, and we don't take away their gun, we don't take away their rights because they went to get help. We honor that above others. We know they need a hand, and they go get that hand. We let them decide when they're ready to get back out there. Mm-hmm. But one of the next steps in resilience is the most important one of all. Patrick, here's where we're failing. Here is what's eating us alive, is sleep. Sleep is a biological blind spot. Our bodies are incompetent at making us get enough sleep because it always happened naturally. Our bodies are pretty good at getting air, food, water, but our bodies are incompetent about getting enough sleep. Sleep's a biological blind spot. The video games are a social blind spot. Now, there's nothing wrong with adults playing video games. There's nothing wrong with adults being on social media. But video games, and to a certain degree, social media, put us in an alpha state. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Got no idea where the last 6 hours went. And your wife is sincerely ticked off. Recent research tells us video games are responsible for 15% of all divorces in America.
Jeez.
Google it. And among younger ages, it's actually quite a bit higher. And what happens is, if you stagger into the house drunk 3 o'clock every night, you know you have a problem. Mm-hmm. You stagger into work sleep deprived because you played games all night long, you have a problem. Mm-hmm. You ever said, you know darn well, if you stagger in the house drunk every night, you got a problem. You stagger in the house, you know, you stagger into work sleep deprived, you have a problem. 18 hours without sleep and your impaired judgment equal to 0.08 legally drunk. 24 hours without sleep, your impaired judgment equal to 0.10 above legally drunk. If somebody showed up in morning roll call drunk, we'd kick his ass. Mm-hmm. If he goes up to roll call sleep deprived because he played video games on social media all night, he needs his ass kicked.
Yeah.
There's nothing cute, there's nothing funny about showing up to work drunk. Mm-hmm. There's nothing cute, there's nothing funny about showing up to work sleep deprived because you were on the computer all night long. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got a sick baby at home and you stay up with a sick baby, then we'll cover you. Take a nap. We got you covered. You played video games on social media all night. You need your tail kicked. Mm-hmm. So here are the two most profoundly stupid things we are doing, and it's killing us. Now remember, a sleep deprived person is equivalent to legally drunk for an impaired. And what we're doing is two profoundly dumb things. Number one is 12-hour shifts. They want to go on 12-hour shifts like firefighters, get all that time off. Or firefighters get to sleep on the job.
Exactly.
Only firefighters and prostitutes make money in bed. There ain't no firefighters, baby. They want to be like firefighters and work those 12-hour shifts, get all that time off. California Highway Patrol, thousands of officers just came off of 12-hour shifts. It was a disaster. At the end of a 12-hour shift, people are exhausted. Mm-hmm. Traffic accidents explode. Internal affairs investigations explode. Investigations for inappropriate aggression explode. At the end of a 12-hour shift, people are exhausted. Mm-hmm. And the other stupid thing that we're doing is rotating shifts. Do some research. Just I'm a huge science geek. My favorite website is sciencedaily.com. I check it every day through every category. Go to sciencedaily.com and load in shift work and start looking at what's happening. Shift work, rotating shifts, were taking years off people's lives. It takes up to a full year to fully adapt to night shift. Mm-hmm. If we're rotating shifts, there is no single action you can do that will better ensure that all your people are performing below standard than rotating shifts. Every time you rotate a shift, your people are behind the eight ball, and they never get a chance to fully adapt. Mm-hmm. And the old-timers knew what they're doing. Now, 8-hour shift, 10s are doable, but just barely. 8-hour shift, bid for your shift based on overtime, or bid for your shift based on seniority. Mm-hmm. 8-hour shift, put a cap on overtime, bid for your shift based on seniority. What happens is the new guys come in and say, I don't want to wait to get seniority to be on day shift. This is no fair. Let's rotate shift. Well, suck it up, buttercup.
Yeah.
Because rotating shifts means everybody loses. If your department's rotating shifts, I tell them, save up money right now. You're going to be sued. You're going to be successfully sued. You are taking years off people's lives, years off their lives of rotating shifts, and you're putting them constantly behind the eight ball. And so You want to stay on day shifts for a career? You want to stay on nights? You want to hunt the wolf? Good for you. You want to move to days? You got the seniority? Good to you. You've earned the seniority. Move to days. But we bid for a shift based on seniority. 8-hour shifts, put a cap on overtime. Remember, 10 is barely doable. 12s are irresponsible. By the time you're on duty for 12 hours, you're exhausted, mm-hmm. and you make judgment errors, you make use of force errors, you make ethical errors. Tired people do things and say things they will regret for the rest of their life.
And it's crazy because I think that law enforcement, some departments out there have this notion, and this is just my opinion again, that we're cops, we can do this, we don't need the sleep. I mean, you know, I can get by on 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night, and I know because I worked graveyards for a number of years, and I was like, I'd get by on 4 or 5 hours of sleep, and that was good, and luckily I never got into a situation, because I think you're exactly right, sir. It does impair your judgment, your reaction time. You don't realize, like you said,
truck drivers are required by law good enough sleep.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That should enrage us.
Yeah.
But there's over 100 professions required by law to get enough sleep, but cops aren't.
Yeah.
If I were king and could do one thing to change our world, I would mandate sleep for cops like we do for truck drivers and air traffic controllers and power plant operators and Amtrak engineers and 100 other professions. Mm-hmm. The idea that we're not mandated to get enough sleep should enrage us. And what happens is now we're undermanned. We're, you know, the Ferguson effect, recruiting is down, retention is down, we're short on people. And the chief says, we got to do maximum overtime. We're short on people. We're going to have cops. No, you don't. Better to have no cop than a tired cop.
Yeah, exactly.
What I tell people is we are in a zero defects environment, like the airlines. The airlines cannot crash a single plane. Oh, come on. You know, 1 million people in the air every day. Isn't it reasonable to crash one plane a month? No. Well, you know, it's reasonable to crash one plane a year. No. Can we crash one plane every decade? No. You cannot crash a single plane. You crash one plane, we will investigate. We'll hold everybody accountable. We'll put people in jail if we have to. That's what zero defects look like. You cannot have one single cop walk out the door and do something stupid. It will be caught on video, and we will all have to live with it. Mm-hmm. You're in a zero defects environment. This is a new world, which every action is being videotaped, not one cop can walk out that door and do something stupid. You tell the chief, you tell the sheriff, you want to be in the next Ferguson? Put tired cops out in the streets. Mm-hmm. You want people riding the streets? You want a cop to do something that will destroy the entire chain of command and our way of life? Put tired cops on the street. The chief should say, unless it's a declared emergency, I will not put tired cops on the street. You want more cops? You hire more. You pay them. But unless it's a declared emergency, unless you order me to do it, I will not put tired cops on the street. And if you order me to do it and bad things happen, that blood is on your hands. We are on the edge of a time, and you'll see it happening, which the entire chain of command will be destroyed, financially, professionally, even legally destroyed, for putting tired cops on the street. It is the most irresponsible thing any leader can possibly do, to put tired cops on the street. Unless it's a declared emergency, we cannot put tired people out there making life and death decisions. And this is the elephant in the living room. It's the blind spot we can work on. And I spent a whole half hour on sleep management. Maybe we're back on board and I'll give you my nuggets on sleep someday. It's one thing about sleep.
Yeah.
Another thing, give people solid nuggets that they can apply. But number one, sleep in a truly dark room or wear a sleep mask. Number two, never touch this news alarm. That's chunks of your life you're throwing away. We teach about healthy naps. Nicotine is of no value. Caffeine is of great value if we use it appropriately, if we don't abuse it on a daily basis. So these are the things we can talk about. And we haven't even begun to get into what happens in the fight. What happened to your mind and body, how you got to be forewarned and forearmed. Again, if you want more info, first and foremost, check out my book on combat. Issued in the DA Academy, issued in the Marshall Academy, translated into 5 languages, Marine Corps Commandant's required reading. There's so much in there that we've got to know about and inform people about. But that if I can kind of shift things around.
Go ahead, sir.
Patrick, you, and the men and women like you with your podcast and the officers seeking this information are the most reassuring, affirming things that we could possibly have in our nation. To know that our cops are out there seeking training and seeking wisdom and seeking knowledge and seeking methods and tools to do their job better. It's the worst of times, it's the best of times. Mm-hmm. Things are bad, but you have job security.
Yeah.
The world desperately needs what you have to give. And that's the baseline of resiliency, mm-hmm. is to know how desperately the world needs what you have to give.
Yeah.
That you're sacrificed for a noble and worthy purpose.
And I tell my listeners, sir, and I know you do, I don't care what the media says, and I don't care what people are saying out there about police officers and the brave men and women who protect this great country every day. We still have a lot of support out there. Don't feed into what the media is saying. There's still a lot of support.
Yeah, the Gallup poll, just a little over a year ago, the Gallup poll, it was run just after the elections. This is after the Baton Rouge murder of four cops and the Dallas massacre of five cops. The Gallup poll was the highest it has ever been, except for 1968, when it was 77%. 76% of the public strongly support law enforcement, as high as it's ever been since 1968, when it was 77%. The American public says, we stand beside you, we're behind you, we support you, but we don't want to be you. Retention is down, recruiting is down, and the opinion of the media is the lowest it has ever been. Mm-hmm. We come back, the media has this blood on their hands. The media, their twisted, distorted misrepresentation of law enforcement, their twisted, sick representation of criminals. The criminals are the hero and cops are the bad guys. The media has this blood on their hands. We're living in tragic, violent times, mm-hmm. but your courage and your honor and your professionalism shine bright for the darkness of the age. Retention is down, recruiting is down, opinion of cops the highest it's ever been, and the opinion of media is the lowest it's mm-hmm. ever been. What has the media accomplished with this sick attack on our cops? What do they accomplish? Mm-hmm. The American public despises them. They've rallied behind our cops. Meanwhile, the cop killers have been empowered with the single worst year-over-year increase in cops murdered in the history of our nation. It's all bad. And the only good news is that the American public has rallied behind our cops. Believe in who you are.
Now, you gave some suggestions, sir, about improving policing, because I think we can always improve. I think you hit it right on the head. Gil Martin, I don't know if you ever, great, great guy. I mean, he talks a lot about this, mental toughness and taking better care of ourselves. What do you think some of the other issues facing law enforcement are, and what do you think they're going to be in the future?
All right, well, the next step in what I teach is a concept of being forewarned and forearmed. In World War II, a major study, about 20% of the veterans of intense combat would admit they messed themselves in one time or another. About half the veterans of intense combat would admit they wet themselves in one time or another. Those are the ones who'd admit it. Mm-hmm. One World War II vet told me one time, he said, all that proves is 80% were liars. Yeah. But I a little over a month ago, I had 300 ambulance, EMS people in my class in Maine. And I asked them, how many of you run into traffic accident victims that have messed themselves? Every single hand goes up. And it is incredibly humiliating. And so even if you don't lose it, you have what we call the pucker factor. Mm-hmm. Pucker factor is when one part of your body is trying to hold in, but another part of the body is trying to eject. Mm-hmm. And why it happens is inside every human body is a toxic waste site. And it's under pressure. If there's trauma to the abdomen, that stuff will gush out and infect the wound. It's very reasonable for the body to dump that toxic waste and relieve that pressure before life and death event. LAPD SWAT 20 years ago told me that they asked to give us a 20-minute warning before we go in. And what they do with that 20-minute warning is what they call the battle cry. Yeah, your body will do that. But when traffic accident victims are devastated, humiliated, and a little psychological first aid goes a long way, that's your body's natural response. A police officer in New Jersey was attacked in his home and engaged in a blazing gunfight from his porch against gangbangers. And he said in his statement, I was in such fear for my life that I defecated in my pants. And people laughed, but it was it was extraordinarily powerful in court to say this man was in his home, unprepared, mm-hmm. in fear for his life, and messed himself. I mean, what better evidence do we have?
Sure.
It's not his natural response. It happens all the time. As we go further into that forewarned and forearmed dynamic, one of the things that really messes people up, there can be a sudden violent death. And your first response is, oh, that could have been me. At the words, you look back at yourself. I wish it was me. I would have laid my life down for that person. My very first response was a selfish response, thinking about myself. But what I tell people is that's the way we're wired. It's like, you know, you're in an airplane and you're with a small child, oxygen mask comes down. What do you do before you put the child's mask on? Put your mask on first.
Exactly.
The fundamental law of survival. Before you can help anybody else survive, you have to survive yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The human brain is the greatest survival tool the world's ever seen. When there's sudden violent death, the little puppy brain, the survival brain, said, oh, that could have been us. Pay attention. If that ever happens to you, I don't want you to be troubled by it. I want you to know it's normal. And then what happens in the event? We got to know. Tunnel vision. The bad guys got tunnel vision, too. I've got a black belt in jiu-jitsu, the martial art of the firearm. I like to shoot. After years, I got my black belt. And when I get a chance to teach, I wrap up the day with a set of survival tricks. You begin with your hand on the gun and you sidestep. If you sidestep and the guy's got tunnel vision, you pretty much bet on it. You come right off his radar screen. But tunnel vision, auditory exclusion, the fact you don't, the shots are muted. You need to know these things ahead of time or they won't matter. Slow motion time. I am convinced slow motion time is real. I have had hundreds of people tell me they can see the bullet, and I believe them. It's like airsoft. It's slow if you track your eyes. I believe them. The memory gaps. Half of all trained seasoned cops have blackouts. Blackouts are freaky. We had cops murdered. Systematic. You know, we had four cops murdered in Baton Rouge, five cops murdered in Dallas, and dozens of times when they tried to do the same thing and were stopped. For every one where we've got this massacre of cops, there's untold numbers where we stopped them before they got their body cut. Mm-hmm. But one of the cops, I trained 200 law enforcement couples in Kansas, and the cop's wife came up, and what happened was instead of murdering cops, this guy was going to murder the cop's family. And he came in the house, and the wife put a loaded double up buck in his face, came over.
Yep.
I tell people, we carry a pistol around because a rifle's a pain in the butt and hard to conceal. When you're at home, you get your choice. You know, it's a home turf. You got to choose which weapon. If you're a bird hunter, they were bird hunters. Your trusty bird gun. You know, in your state, you can make it do what you need to do. But the point of that is, she told me. She said, "I heard the 911 call of my. I heard the audio tape of my 911 call. This day, I have no memory of it.
Wow.
And it messed me up." And then somebody said, "You need to read the book. Read the book on combat."
Mm-hmm.
Some of the healing words on the planet is, "That's normal." To understand that most people in a similar environment have these memory gaps and then memory distortions, you know, simple things that are wrong. But all of that, what happens in the event, pales by comparison of what happens after the event. When the body responds and it's not PTSD, it's normal. A cop in a gunfight in Arkansas. A week later, he and his wife sitting in a swim meet in the bleachers, watching their daughter at a swim meet. Starter's gun goes off when he doesn't expect it. Boom! His heart is pounding, gasping for air, drenched with sweat. His wife thought he's having a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
What's happened, though, is during that life and death event, a powerful neural pathway was established, like touching a hot stove, but more so. A week later, a random gunshot goes off, doesn't expect it. Boom! The puppy brain, the survival brain is going crazy. It's normal. It is not PTSD. How you deal with it will decide whether or not it becomes PTSD. You know where we see this most often? Cops are in a life and death gunfight.
Mm-hmm.
Week later, month later, 6 months later, they go to qualify. They fire their weapon the first time, and the puppy goes crazy.
Mm-hmm.
They're broken. They can't qualify. This is one of the most common responses. As officers have been in a life and death event, they can't qualify. They think they're broken. The first time they pull that trigger, the puppy comes to visit, and they're going crazy. So that's normal. You start with some dry fire. You do a little sub-cal. You work them up. Every range trainer knows how to deal with that. Mm-hmm. But you got warned that these things will happen to your body. And it's forewarned and forearmed about what happens after the event. the most powerful tool I can put in their hands is the breathing exercise. For decades, we've thought breathe in through the nose, four, hold four, out four, hold four. Why do we breathe in through the nose? That's just what seems to work. Well, last year, a major scientific study said a deep breath in through the nose will almost completely extinguish a fear response. But it's got to be in through the nose. Ain't that something? So at the moment of truth, it's taking that deep breath in through the nose. Front sight, press, game over. Front sight, press, game over. But just taking that deep breath. Mm-hmm. I've got thousands of case studies organized by topic in my files. No exaggeration, thousands. And I've been on the road for 20 years doing this. And I organized by topic. And the topic where we've had the most response is the breathing and how it saved lives and changed lives and what it's done for them. Again, out of my book on combat. And just fast forwarding through this book to find the final step is this. Survivor guilt is not PTSD. It's normal. It's hard. It's grieving. Mm-hmm. Us, but it's normal. In the normal cycle of life, we will all bury our parents. Is anything more normal that parents will die before their children? But it's hard. One of the hardest things we'll ever do in most of our lives is to bury our mom and dad. Mm-hmm. But that's not PTSD. It's grieving. It's not us.
Yeah.
Is there anything more normal that in combat people will die? Survivor guilt is not PTSD. It's grieving. It's loss. It's hard. But don't get them mixed up. And understand that it's the human condition to grieve for those we've lost. And to get help if you need it. There are people who can help with grieving. There is grievance counselors and people who can help with that process. I lost my mom and my dad and pretty close together about 20 years ago. I had a couple of hard years. Was that PTSD? No. It's a normal cycle of life.
Yeah. Hard. Yeah, sir. I mean, and the one thing that really kind of, when you were talking, something you said earlier, going into the breathing and taking that extra second, we have time on our side. A lot of law enforcement, you know, most of the time, in most instances, in my 21 years in law enforcement, we have time on our side. We don't have to make that. There are instances where we have to make that quick decision. But the majority of time, you have time on your side. Slow it down. Like you said, yes. Wait for backup. Yes. Check your breathing. Check your sight picture. Check your backdrop. All those things. Just take your time.
Amen. Amen. Isn't that funny? The old Vietnam veteran first sergeant telling the young captain in Grenada, do it the way we trained him. Mm-hmm. Take your time. We got all the time. The bad guy's still going to be there. Lay down that base of fire. Pop that smoke. Put in that flanking organization. Don't feel like we got to get up and charge the bad guy. That's why the professionals win battles. Mm-hmm. We take our time.
Yeah.
Well, all you good, magnificent men and women out there that are doing incredible things for us as we begin. We're now at the beginning of 2018. Old geezers like me, we thought by now we'd have moon bases and flying cars. We ain't got no moon bases or flying cars, but cops, we got you.
Yeah. Well, sir, right. I appreciate you so much. I know you're very busy. I think you're going to be out in Colorado soon.
I'm in 4 or 5
states. Yeah.
My website is killology.com. Mm-hmm. Killology.com. All of our books are available. My son and I have a gun business, mm-hmm. sheepdogknifeandgun.com. Check out sheepdogknifeandgun.com. Meanwhile, we're doing Saturday House of Worship security team training, sheepdogseminars.com. So we're doing some good things out there and touching a lot of lives. But, check them out when you get a chance.
Well, and I know your son is a spec op guy who served admirably, so thank him for his service.
One of my sons is a master gunsmith with mm-hmm. 5 patents to his name. He lives right next door. My other son is my S3, my right-hand guy here, a champion rock climber. I've got 3 boys. They all done good. But life is good. We are blessed. We are most blessed.
Well, I appreciate you so much coming on the show, sir. And thank you, obviously, for your service and what you continue to do for our nation's military and veterans and law enforcement. Thank you so much, sir. And I'd love to have you back on sometime in the future.
New Patrick. Siren sharpens iron.
All righty, sir. Take care.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast. And reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.